All right, welcome to the Hilla. Today we got a special treat. We got Soli with us today. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you, bro?
I'm doing good. How's life in the East Coast treating you?
Oh man, life is wonderful. I can't complain. It's just hot. It's hot.
Oh, most definitely.
It gets really humid here down in Middle Georgia because I'm a little bit away from Atlanta, about like hour and a half, 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So a little bit closer to the Florida side, but it gets really, really humid.
Oh, no, I feel you on that. I was in Florida last summer, and it was just absolutely insane. It was 2 seconds outside, and you're already sweating.
Yeah, so especially for brothers, both of us from Africa, we know how that heat is, man.
That's the thing. It's a different type of heat. Like, we're used to dry heat. I know, like, in Sudan, it's a very dry heat. I don't know how it is in Senegal, but it's different here with humidity.
Yeah, it gets humid too. It gets really humid there.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Just to give you a little bit of background, I know we talked a little bit before we started, but on the podcast, kind of the whole purpose of today is pretty much just dive into your journey, talk about your career in engineering, a little bit about your upbringing, and then just kind of go into your goals. So just kind of like past, present, future type deal. Mm-hmm. And then the purpose of the podcast is, when I was originally starting this, like I told you, I was just wanting to pretty much use this as an example, because I know for a lot of folks in low-income communities, they don't get to come across folks that are in engineering or in medicine or, you know, in real estate, or just, you know, equity owners in some sense. Mm-hmm. But simply just to be able to put your journey on display today, and just kind of, it's just pretty much a basic conversation. But let's get right into it, and then let's dive into it and just kind of hear about yourself. So quick intro is who you are, where you're from, and also how we met.
All right, so my name is Suleiman. I usually go by Sule. So I was born in Senegal, West Africa, originally, and then I moved here in 2006. You know, my father was here before, and then he moved the rest of our family here. Basically, we moved in Illinois, so we started going to school, and then I transitioned to Iowa State University after high school, and I studied at aerospace engineering. It's always been a passion of mine of, you know, things related to space, you know, airplanes and things like that. So basically, I kind of knew what I was doing coming in. And after graduation, I moved to Georgia. At first, I was in Atlanta for a little bit, for about a year and a half. And then I got offered a good position with the Air Force as an aerospace engineer on the civilian side of it. So obviously, I couldn't pass up on that opportunity. So I definitely took it. And ever since then, I've been working there for a little bit less than 2 years now.
That's what's up, man.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, one thing I like to do when we first start is just kind of always dive into the folks' upbringing. So what was kind of your childhood like? Were there any experiences that really kind of stand out to you that shaped you to be the person you are today?
So that's a very good question, because for me, with my family, it's always about education. It's always been education. So back when we were in Senegal, my dad was here in the States, so he put us in private school. So we were just constantly studying. The first thing we came back from school was, got to get your homework done before you go outside, play soccer, you know, play with friends. So it's kind of shaped me into you know, being really passionate about studying and being passionate about engineering and things like that. So, and I've kind of just grew up understanding the real definition of hard work, because my dad was always working hard. As he was here in the States, he had 2 or 3 jobs working every day to make sure we were fed back home in Senegal. I'm sorry?
What'd your dad work as?
So when he was here, he worked at it in a manufacturing company that make office chairs. So he was like kind of like a lower bit assistant managing role there, and he had some other part time jobs.
For sure. And then he was working in the States while you and your family were back in Senegal.
Yes. So yeah, he was here working 2-3 jobs every day and just sending back money, while the rest of our family were just basically going to school and just trying to learn things and try to make a career out of it. And then that's when he was finally able to pull the trigger to move us in the transition from Senegal to United States.
Awesome. What was it? What were your experiences like with school? Were you someone that like enjoyed school? You mentioned that, you know, your family really valued and pushed on you, but did you personally like school?
Yes. To be honest, we were a little pressured at some times, just because, you know, education was a big deal, you know, as you know, Education was a big deal. So I know for a fact our classes, at least for me, our classes, my dad always expected me to be at least the top five, students, or even when it came to exams. So, but it was a good thing, you know, the pressure was for a very good thing because it shaped me who I am today, you know.
For sure. And that comment of like, as you understand, like when people, although for us, we understand, I think some folks don't know how heavily valued education is in most African cultures. Can you dive a little bit into that and where you think that kind of like stems from?
And I think from my experience, education is much harder. It is out of states than it is in the States, just because we really, really value it. We put it above in a lot of different things. So for example, I guess a lot of families, they are willing to do a lot just to make sure their children have a bright future when it comes to education. You know, it's the whole example of, you know, families working hard to send their kids to, you know, international kids from a different country to coming to the States just to study. And also the fact that, you know, you having a degree in the United States and a college in the United States out of the country, it gives you respect. It gives you a lot of respect, and it shows a great deal about it.
For sure. Like one thing I thought was always strange was like when you see students that are coming from outside of the US to here, 8 to 9 times out of 10, they already have their calculus done. They already are already well ahead in chemistry. But in the US, if you're seen as someone that already has calc before you get to college, you're seen as like, oh, you're a genius. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, it's seen as this big thing. But like back home, that's just called, like, if you're not at that level before college, you're considered like, okay, you didn't even pass high school then, because that's just like the minimum requirement. You already have to be at that level to just even in order to get past high school. Whereas here is that scene going above and beyond, which exactly. I thought was always something that was funny. But exactly. Out of curiosity too, is just like outside of school though, how are you spending your time? So you mentioned, you know, you're someone that's really into your studies, but outside of the classes, were you doing anything? Was there anything
so,
that took a lot of your time?
I've always been passionate about soccer. Basically outside of, let's say for example, in high school, outside of school, I was doing soccer and I was also doing track and cross country. So I was, when in middle school and high school, I was just basically very, very active. It was not a point where I was just sitting down. I was always doing something. You know, if I came back from soccer practice, I would be outside with friends, just trying to find different things, different things to be passionate about. But for the most part, I think I stayed true with sports, always with soccer and pretty much basketball. And as my brother, I have an older brother who's playing basketball. So he would kind of just like, I was always hanging out with him and then just playing with his friends. And also, so that's what really got me more passionate about sports as well.
As a kid, did you see yourself going into athletics, or did you see yourself more going down like the path of engineering, or would you do?
I think as a kid, I've always dreamed of being an astronaut. That's like, I don't know, for me that thing was like really, really amazing. I thought it would be like really insane. And I guess I was kind of shaped into it. My uncle was an electrician, so when I was younger, I would always follow him around when new houses were built. So I would always follow him around just to see, because I was a very curious kid. I was taking speakers apart, breaking it just to see what was inside, you know, connecting wires, putting batteries on it to hear the static of the speaker. I was taking fans apart. I used to take my video game systems apart, like literally lay it down.
Your parents say when they saw that?
I mean, they wouldn't know. They wouldn't know, because I'd just be in my room. I'd lock the door and take my entire video game system or some electrical equipment that I actually didn't need anymore. So just take it apart just to see how I could put it back together. So I think that's what really just shaped everything. And speaking with my siblings, they said they knew I was going to be an engineer because they saw me doing that when I was really younger. I started at such a young age. Yeah.
So when was like the first time you heard of aerospace engineering? And also, do you still have that goal of like wanting to be an astronaut?
So it's the first time, I would say, was my first plane ride moving to the States. But I guess I got interested into space and things like that back. So when, you know how we used to power outages a lot, you know, back home. Yeah. So whenever there was a power outage, I would lay down in the middle of the yard or outside and just look at the stars, stargaze for hours and hours. And that's what kind of got me curious. And then moving to the States, when I took my very first plane ride, I think that's when that was it. Like, as soon as I took my plane ride, I said, okay, this is amazing. Like, it got me curious, like, how is this airplane working? How is it able to get us from one place to another? And I think that's where basically it started, pretty much. And yeah, to answer your second question, I'm not sure, honestly. I'm still thinking about it. As I've looked at, a lot of astronauts don't actually get accepted into until they were, like, you know, a little bit older, 30, you know, 31, and things like that. So I'm still exploring different options. It's always an option, but who knows, really? Yeah.
What are the requirements even to be an astronaut? Just like, so, physical and then like certain years of experience in the field, or?
Yes, I would say it's funny because I almost submitted an application because the last application was end of March. I was looking into whether if I should apply or not. Unfortunately, I didn't. So one of the requirements was 1,000 hours of flight experience, or having to go to master's and get like something in related to the STEM. So that was basically one of the requirements. And there was a lot of other physical requirements which would come later on if you get selected for the first phase and things like that. I believe there was 18,000 applicants, and I think only about 200 or 300 actually get invited for interviews and then move on to the next stage. So yeah, it's very competitive.
It's insane. Yeah, really competitive. Yeah,
yes, it is.
So now, fast forward to moving to the States. What was that transition like for you? You mentioned the difference of, you know, we already brought up like the differences in like values or in like education, mm-hmm. but what was just that overall process like, whether it was just the experiences or the differences in values or just like culture shock for you or anything like that?
Yeah, I think it was a huge culture shock, you know, and it was back home before. We were always watching movies about the States, you know, United States, and you always have dreams of, you know, coming here, wondering what it was like. So it was definitely a huge culture shock. I was excited though when I was moving here, new opportunities and, you know, and more schooling and things like that. So I think at first, I kind of struggled a little bit just because, you know, having to learn a new language, English. So we started learning English back then before we moved here, but I still had to be involved in all my other classes while taking your English language learners classes. So that kind of held me back a little bit. But as far as fitting in, I think it took me a little bit longer just because the English kind of held me back. But I was just watching a lot of TV, you know, and that kind of helped me pick up the language a little bit. And then I was outside playing. When my dad got us our bikes, we were outside playing with other neighbors. So I think hanging out with them, the culture was still a little bit different, you know, how you're coming from a Muslim, you know, you're coming from a Muslim family, Muslim country background, and then coming to a different, now to the States, where Muslim is, the Islam religion is not always that big, but it's still part of it. So you have to still bring in that culture as well also. So it was, I would say I definitely managed it really well.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming to States where places like, it's, yeah, like you said, it's a Muslim country, and then now you come into the States and you see people like drinking at bars and, like, you know, people dress very different, and like,
yeah, definitely,
it's just you see all these big differences and it stands out to you, and like you have your culture at home still, you know, you're able to maintain that with a lot of families, and then like once you leave home, you're mm-hmm. navigating a whole new culture with a whole different set of norms. Did you ever feel like at sometimes, you know, it was difficult to navigate or readjust, like, you know, like leave this culture at home and then have this one culture outside and like having to readjust every time you walked out the door? Did that ever like get stressful for you?
Absolutely. I would say, especially it was a little bit more difficult when I was younger, because, you know, when you're young, you're trying to fit in, you know, you're trying to fit in, have friends, you know, just be well-known person, especially from a person that's coming from a different country and not being used to this. So I think that's what it was. You're having to like live these two different cultures, you know, as soon as you come into the house, it's gotta change, you know. I think it took a while. And I know for me, I always, when I was younger, I've always like tried to fit in the most, you know, to have more friends and things like that. So I would definitely agree with your statement, yeah.
And prior to getting to Iowa State, how did you originally like hear about the school, and like what kind of made you choose that school versus another school?
So it's actually when I, the University of Kansas was my dream school. For some reason, every time I sat down and watched basketball, I was like, man, there was something about the school that I really liked. So I looked into their aerospace program, and they said they had an aerospace program. So I was like, I was dreaming of going there. And it was actually the first school I got accepted to. I remember I was sitting in the cafeteria. I got an email saying that I got accepted. I got up and screamed. Everyone was looking at me like I was crazy. You know, so I told my friends, like, hey, I got accepted to my dream school. So as I did more research, you know, I was thankful for my brother. He kind of actually helped me through that transition. As you know, it's the transition going into college is very overwhelming. You know, there's so many things that you don't know that maybe you should know. Some kids were fortunate enough to have that parents to help them out with that transition.
What were some of the things for you personally?
So for me, I would say, you know, having to like be able to fill out financial aid, you know, make sure you get your schedules and just make sure you, how much loans you have, whether you'll be able to get scholarships and grants, and, you know, making sure you get all the documents and then making sure you're ready for school, you know, you change your mindset, because it's a different mindset coming from high school to college. You know, first of all, the way you study is so different, you know, the culture, the environment, everything was different. So, you know, you kind of had to like, it took time to readjust. And for me, it took a little bit of time for me to adjust. But going back to your question though, so after I got accepted to Kansas, I started applying to more schools. I got accepted to Iowa State University, and I was like, okay, so this was 3 hours away from home, so that's fine, I'll visit. So I visited with a group of friends, old classmates in high school. And I think as soon as I stepped out of the car, I looked at the school. I said, okay, this is it. This is it. I love the school.
Or what was it?
Sorry?
Was it just like because it's a really nice campus, like looks like.
Yes, it is.
Scenery or what?
Yes, the scenery. I think like, so as soon as I stepped out of it, I just looked at the scenery, how beautiful the campus was. And this was before we even got to the aerospace building. So it was, that's how I knew. Okay, I really like the school. It's not too far from home. And they gave me a couple of grants and scholarships. So I was willing to take that, you know, I was willing to, because at that point I've gotten tired of, you know, going to search for different schools and things like that. And I looked up their engineering program. It was really good. Looked at the aerospace program. I was happy with it. So I said, okay, that's it. And
it's like three of the last six CEOs for Boeing have been Iowa State graduates. So like
they exactly.
have a history of having like folks at Boeing and like NASA directors and all that.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, definitely.
And then once you do get here, you look at Iowa State's demographics of how many students actually look like us. It's about maybe 1,000 out of the 34,000 students, and even less in engineering, but particularly aerospace. I believe in aerospace, it's not even 100 black students. It's like what, probably like 20 maybe?
To be honest, it was probably a little bit less than that.
Really? Like would you say 10 maybe, 15?
I think between 10 and 20.
That's insane. So what was your experience like as a black student at Iowa State?
I think at some point, in some classes, I was the only black student, if I remember. Some of my freshman classes, I was pretty much one or two student. There was one or two Nigerians, so kind of like, okay. So I felt a little bit, you know, it felt a little bit easier, I guess. I was like, okay. So, you know, maybe let me try to be friends with these, you know, with these guys, you know, because, you know, we kind of understand each other, you know, we're both coming from Africa and things like that. So it was a huge shock. And I think as I grew, as I took more classes, as I, you know, networked more, I met people like you guys, you know, people like Bashar, people, you know, a lot of different people. it got much easier. It got much easier. But at first, it was like, wow, this is this was something.
So how did you find that community? Because I think that's one of the hardest things of when you first get here is being able to find that community, and knowing that there is that community.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, because one of the first things you hear is, don't just focus on studies, go out, network, get involved in clubs and activities. That's how you meet people who could shape your future, who could help you get to the next level where you don't think about it. So I started joining I was part of the French club, and I was part of the Aerospace Association, and then African Student Association, and then NSBE, National Student Black Engineers. So I got involved in that. I was not too active, I would say, just because the studying, it took a while for me to adjust. So I was kind of more focused on that. But as I went out more, I got involved, and I was even playing for the club soccer team. That's why I met Wadud and them. I met them
those
there.
That don't know, can you just give a quick background of who those people are, like Wadud, Bashar?
So Bashar was one of the first people I met here. He is from Saudi. So I think he was a manufacturing engineer or something. So I was introduced to him by a fellow Egyptian friend who was named Mohammed Mekki. So, and this was the first couple of weeks. So we kind of related. We were both all three of us were engineers, and then, you know, we're coming from a Muslim family. So we kind of clicked, and we were just hanging out and things like that. We're doing them, and I met them through going to the soccer club. I heard there was a soccer club, but okay, I'm definitely getting involved. So I met those guys there, and then I kind of started like looking around to see what they were doing, you know, something that I could do better. I heard that they were involved in like the NSBE and other different clubs. So I tried to like, you know, try to be closer to them, because I kind of looked over as an older brother, even though we were like, I think closer to the same age and such. So I kind of just like, you know, I kind of tried to be like them, I guess. Not tried to be like them, but I kind of look up to them, you know, to see what they're doing, how I can actually, you know, be a better person and things like that. And then, of course, I met Bashar through you when you guys were roommates, correct?
Yeah. He was best friends with Rudy. And that's how I met Bashar. And then, like, every day would just be all of us hanging out. And then that's how we actually met right there.
Yeah, exactly. I remember he brought me into your guys' place. And I met you. I was like, okay, this dude is cool. Like, I like, you know, I like hanging out with this crowd. You know, I have another crowd when I was hanging out with. But, you know, they were, like, not more active, not more social. So I kind of told myself that I was like, I got to balance the school and then, you know, the social life. Because that's what it keeps you going. That's what keeps you, you know. Keep give you momentum and things like that.
For sure, you gotta have that. And then so you're now graduated, you're working full-time as a aerospace engineer, but mm-hmm. when you're talking, you just brought the point of development, right? How do you work your way to that point from just being a college student who just got here, you're still in the process of learning everything? Mm-hmm. How'd you go about navigating that whole path of like career development, pretty much?
To be honest, I would say networking is what got me here. Yep. Network is knowing people that knew other people. So
people that like really got you, helped you get to like, you know, the Air Force, or even like right after college getting your first full-time job?
It's a crazy story, because a friend of mine, fellow classmate who in aerospace, his name is Raj. So his uncle actually worked for the Air Force here on the base. So he told me, he's like, hey, my uncle works on base, and they're having a hiring event. They're willing to hire engineers. So before that, I was working at the headquarters of Home Depot down close to down Atlanta. So I was doing a test engineering position there. And the reason I took that job was just to get my feet started. That was my first time moving into Georgia after school. So that was my first job after school. So I decided to drive down 2 hours. I was standing in line for about 3 hours. You know, it was 1,500 people. You know, so coming in, as soon as I got to the interview table, they pulled me out of line. 400 people. I was cutting in front. They pulled me on a line to ask me if I was an engineer. I said, yes. They got super excited. So I'm like, okay, the whole process, I was just confused. I was like, what's going on, you know? Because you know how school is, you're expected, you know, when you talk to a company, they're like, okay, we'll give us your resume, we'll call you back later and things like that. So as soon as I got pulled out of line, they interviewed me on the spot. Wow. So they called the chief engineer comes with someone else, another senior engineer. They interviewed me on the spot. They said, okay, I like you. I don't want to let you go. So let's make this happen. Next thing you know, I was signing paperwork. I started doing security clearance, like on the spot.
Just right away.
Right away. And it took me a while. It took me a while to process it. But I'm like, okay, I guess the fact that all it took was I knew someone else. You know, I knew someone else. If I didn't know that person, I wouldn't have been where I am today. And that's why I guess networking is really important. You know, knowing people, surrounding yourself with people that are, you know, always talking about things that are important to you. You know, it kind of helps you get to places, because all it takes is one decision. One small decision can change after the course of your life.
Most definitely. And before you got to your full-time role, did you have any internships while you were in school?
So I was, unfortunately, I didn't get any internships. I was working two jobs just because I had to provide for myself, you know. So I didn't want my parents or family members giving me money while I was in school. You know, I just didn't like them. I didn't like that. That is never sat right with me. So I got a research position. I was doing composites and design research with one of my professors. And I was also working for a call of engineer. So that was basically the experiences I've had besides academic projects and things like that. So I didn't have any internships.
And no, that's still a very valuable experience too, by the way. Out of curiosity, how many hours a week would you say you were working while going to school?
I would say some days I put in over just about 20 hours. The day, it depends really. It depends on, so I was working under a grad student who was also working on his thesis. So some days it was a lot of work, other days it was not a lot of work. So I would fluctuate. Luckily though, my professor he let me set my own schedule. So I could either come in the morning or in between classes or in the afternoon, where my other job was basically kind of like a fixed part-time job. You know, it was fixed part-time hours that I would come in, you know, three out of five times a week. So I would say some days it ranged between 10 to 20 hours.
Well, definitely. And like, so you're doing that. So you're working mm-hmm. 10 to 20 hours a week. You're mm-hmm. going to school. And mm-hmm. like during the time, I knew you were always someone that like, you were very adamant about working out.
Yeah.
So you're still staying in shape. You're getting your classes done and you're working at the same time. How are you able to balance all of that?
I think it took me a while, to be honest, but I think one thing people have told me that is you just gotta like kind of plan out things. So I started, I didn't do this until like a little bit past, I believe sophomore year, like write out a schedule, plan out your day by the hour. Mm-hmm. Basically that really just helped me plan things out. Cause you know, people always say, I don't have time. I used to say that a lot, but then, so when I actually sat down and just started writing down my calendar, planning it hour by hour, every single day of the week, I think it helped me see what my open schedules were, what I could fill in on that time. And it's basically called time blocking. It's crazy because I read a book about it, but I was doing it before I read the book. So it's just like scheduling appointments for yourself for those times where you actually get the things done. And then, you know, it helps you see your calendar, helps you free up things better.
No, for sure. I think that's one of the most powerful things. Like I personally do that too. And I don't think I'd be able to do any of the things I'm doing without that, because when it comes to time management, like if you're not being intentional about how you're spending your time, then it just kind of goes by. And like, instead of saying the words, I don't have the time, mm-hmm. try saying this is not a priority. Like it's very different when you say, I don't have time to work out versus my health is not a priority right now.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
When you're able to say that to yourself, you're like, okay, if I'm okay with that sentence, then okay, mm-hmm. I don't have to do it right now. But that's typically the type of mindset I do as well. And like, you don't need to, I think reading books helps if you want to like go deeper into it, especially like, mm-hmm. you know, you're at a point where mm-hmm. you are now, because you're working full time and then you're also running your nonprofit. So yeah, that's another whole new level of work too while you're still trying to master your time. So now if you want to go to the next step outside of, you know, just blocking out times, what else could you be doing? Is there anything else you've also implemented?
So outside of the time block, I think what I've been doing is trying to get my most important task done early, because that gives me momentum. That gives me momentum to finish out the other things. So one thing I've been trying to do is ask myself every morning, what's the most important thing that I can do in the morning? That way, if I do it, everything else is not high priority, and I can get those done. So basically, I think that's what's been helping me get through work and just for things, you know, being able to manage what I'm doing outside of work, like real estate and the nonprofit and things like that, and of course exercising.
Yeah, and can you just dive into your nonprofit? Tell us what kind of the mission is, as well as how you got started for it, and then after that, also maybe dive into your involvement in real estate.
Absolutely. So nonprofit, it was actually, so my sister used to work in the hospital. So she, you know, the fact that she was working in the hospital, he had her, you know, she kind of started thinking about, okay, how can we give ways? Cause you know, back home, back in Senegal, and it's not even just in Senegal, it's all over Africa, you know, the smaller rural areas, rural cities, they don't have big hospitals, you know, and some of them are not even called hospitals, they're called medical centers, you know, because all of the doctors, all of nurses, they want to go to the big cities where they have more opportunities there. And, you know, that kind of leaves the smaller cities empty. They're not getting a lot of doctors and nurses and medical supplies. It's a huge problem. So basically, you know, with the help of my family, we are running a nonprofit called Hain Foundation. So the goal is to provide medical supplies and just medical supplies and then just different types of items to help better, to help patients more, and then doctors be able to do their job better. So we have a few different projects. So one of our projects right now is definitely related to coronavirus. So it's a COVID-19 relief where we're asking for donations. We're raising funds to get masks and then hand sanitizers to send to those medical centers. So once we do that, we'll be able to distribute it and then have a ceremony to make sure all those medical centers are actually getting the masks for a start. To be being able to, you know, it makes the nurses and doctors be able to do their jobs better, you know.
For sure.
And, excuse me. Yeah.
And you're currently in the States. So how are you kind of still doing this work, and how are you able to still mobilize and, you know, still make an impact even though you're not there?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We have my uncles and cousins, they have contacts to those different smaller cities. So that way, so we actually, we're in the process of transitioning those masks so we purchase the masks in the cities, and then we're just going to transfer them. So my uncle was the other day, he actually rented a car, and then we took all the masks and then was able to drive down to the smaller city to be able to get it through those medical centers. So I think having those contacts back home, being family members, being someone you can trust, because, you know, this is really important. So we want to make sure every process is smoothly, and people are donating. So we want to make sure the money goes where it's actually supposed to go. So we have very trustworthy family members to make sure that everything, the process is as smoothly as possible, and we're actually making a difference.
For sure. And then in regards to like the long term for your nonprofit, what are maybe some of the goals or maybe projects you'd like to do long term, whether it's post-COVID or 5-10 years from now type deal?
So the second project is we're trying to get a digital ultrasound, you know, to be able to help with the birth process, you know, a lot easier, because there's a lot of women are having issues with during child labor and things like that. So it's kind of a huge problem. That's another one of ours we're having. And another goal would be, ideally, I'm still working on the business plan, but ideally we would like to actually take a trip there to see what other smaller cities that we've never heard of, smaller villages that we've never heard of, how we can actually impact those. You know, if we set up a structure in those small villages, how can we use those villages, those medical centers, to be able to make an impact into other even smaller medical centers where they don't have that opportunity. So I think we're still in the process. I mean, this is fairly new. It's all fairly new to us. So I think we're still in the process of just trying to make sure our first two projects will go well. And then eventually we'll start, you know, seeing. We have the idea of expanding. I like the idea of expanding for sure. So who knows, at some point it could be all of Africa. It could be Sudan, Somalia, different countries in Africa. So ideally, I would love to see it.
And if there's anything I can do to help you get connected with folks in Sudan, I'm always more willing to help.
Absolutely.
If you had all the resources you need as of right now, what would you want to do for Senegal?
What would I want to do for Senegal? That's a good question. To be honest, I've always had the idea, and this is going back to my engineering side, I've always had the idea of opening up a technical school in Senegal, and because there is a lot of hidden talent in Africa. And I have this idea of, you know, wanting to get kids more involved in STEM, you know, science and technology and engineering, because I know there's a lot of hidden talent. And because right now they don't have the luxury to do so. There's not a lot of opportunity. So I think that's ideally, I would like to do that and be able to teach kids all about engineering and just give them a little bit of the opportunities that we got to have here, learn in different schools. So that way, I feel like that will make a huge impact into the development of Africa for sure.
Most definitely. Out of curiosity, for technical, what's your take on, so that's a great idea first off, and I would love to help with that if when you do start that process, so please let me know.
Absolutely.
I was just going to ask, what's your take on the value of the college degree, and do you think that's something that's losing value or gaining value? Because I think the rise of these technical schools or just these trade schools are actually hurting the value of college, because people are starting to realize, oh, like, instead of doing 4 or 5 years of software engineering at this school and paying like 40K or more, in that time I could just drop 8K or 7K, 10 months, I get the certificate, and I qualify for the exact same software engineering jobs.
I think, to me, I would say it's all about experience. Experience, doing more hands-on than actually studying. I think that will get kids that are actually interested in way more involved, and it forces them to be more creative. You know, when you're working with your hands, I'm a person that likes to work with my hands. You know, I'm an engineer, so I like to touch things. I can never sit down and not touch things. So I feel like a lot of people would learn by experience. So instead of, you know, just focusing on like the concepts and things like that, I want to make it, ideally, I want to make it more hands-on. The African school have different labs, different projects where it actually is more hands-on. So that way it forces kids to be creative and things like that. I think that would definitely help, and that would definitely make it work.
For sure. And then what's your take on the value of the college degree? Do you think that's something that's gaining or losing value as of right now?
I think within Africa, I think it still does. I think still people still value the that college degree in education. I know for the States, it's starting to lose that, just because people are starting to not be interested in college anymore. But I feel like within Africa, people will always value it. Eventually, it might, you know, people might start to lose interest in it. But I think as of now, it's still gaining momentum. You know, the fact of But the issue is, I guess everyone is, you know, when people finish studying, they don't want to go back to home countries because there's a lot of opportunities there. So they start their career here in the States or over in Europe and things like that. But I would say right now, to my experience, I would say I think it's still in Africa, still is gaining value.
For sure. I agree with that. In Africa, I think the value of education is so high up. And that, I don't think it's going anywhere, and I don't think it compares to a lot of other parts of the world in that sense, but I think that's the reason it upholds it. But there's not necessarily different options outside of college, and like when we value education that much, but if there are ever alternatives, maybe what do you think some of those might be, and like what could you see the future of education being if colleges weren't wrong?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
I was just asking, so like, if colleges weren't around, what would you say would be like the next alternative for like the future of education? Like, because people are not going to stop valuing education. I just don't see that.
Right.
But without colleges being present, how do you think people would go about that? Because we are seeing people like, you know, graduate from YouTube University. You know what I mean? Like, some people are literally just hop on YouTube and be one of the coldest programmers. And that's just the way they started.
Exactly. But I think I would say with the increase of the usage of internet, and I think eventually that might drop. Eventually, I think people will be out there, force themselves to actually learn a new skill where they can actually use that to be able to build a business or something, and that doesn't have, so that way they don't have to go to college. But it also may be different because as a person, you know, who's coming from Africa with African parents, they may not always agree with that, you know, they may not always agree with that. So it kind of, there's ups and downs into it. There's pros and cons and things like that.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And then just to get back to, because we kind of want to change, but get back into what you're kind of doing outside of your current work. So we talked about the nonprofit, and then you also mentioned real estate. How'd you get involved in real estate, and where are you kind of at in your real estate journey as of now?
So I just recently closed on our first property, my partner and I. So it's a duplex. So I'm brand new to it. I'm brand new to real estate. I think it all started the day after graduation. I moved out. I came back home with my parents, you know, and I was sitting there like, now what? Because I didn't have a job. So my brother gave me a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah. You know about the book?
Yeah, actually, I just missed reading it not too long ago. Can you give us folks a summary for those that don't know about it? Because
it's a
really fire book.
So Rich Dad, Poor Dad is about the kid who grew up on both sides of the family, where his actual dad was a hardworking teacher for the government. And
like a PhD?
Yes, a PhD. So who had the poor mindset, you know. And then the rich dad was his best friend's dad, who was an entrepreneur, who had business, who had a lot of different properties, and was also involved in real estate. So he kind of got to experience the mindset of those, how where one person, one dad would say, son, we can't afford this. Where the other dad would force him to think, it was like, how can we afford it? We'll force him to be creative, how we afford it. And it just basically talks about, you know, how the rich mindset is, and then how you can actually build for your future, how money works, how, you know, how assets, what an asset is versus a liability, you know, how, you know, it talks about different things that you never thought of. You know, the book just really opened my mind about how there's so many endless possibilities of ways to build wealth, you know, provide for your family, you know, and things like that. So I think that changed my mindset as soon as I finished that. I finished it within 2 weeks. First of all, that's never happened. That never usually happens, you know. I never really liked reading, honestly, until now. So I finished that book in 2 weeks because I didn't have nothing else to do. I didn't have a job, you know. So I think
that switch for you, like you just say, I'm kind of the same. I never really got into reading, honestly, until just this past year. But was there like a particular thing that just gave you that switch, or just kind of like changed your interest?
I think it was just like at the first, that very, very first book, I didn't have anything to do. So I'm like, okay, you know, let me actually sit down. When I read that, I think it kind of just forced me to be able to open my mind up a little bit, where I was actually like, okay, I need to start reading more books to understand how things work, because I feel like reading that book was just the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. just beginning of something. There's so many opportunities out there. So I read that and I was like, okay, so I forced myself to read other books, and I actually tried to get books I was more interested in. So I started looking into real estate. At first when I looked into real estate, I looked at it and I was like, okay, real estate expensive. No, that's it. So I gave up on it at first.
No.
And I started doing the e-commerce side. So I went to the e-commerce side. So I started doing drop shipping. You know, I was, built a website.
What were you doing drop shipping for? And can you talk about what drop shipping is for those that
know? So So, easy way to explain dropshipping is basically you have an e-commerce store where you import products for different manufacturers in China using AliExpress or Alibaba. So that way, when you have the products, when the customer comes to buy from your website, you don't actually see the product. They just the manufacturer ships it directly to the customer.
So no inventory at all.
No inventory, no cost with that, you know. Yep. So I fell in love with that idea. So I started doing that for a couple of months. So I built two websites. One thing that I extremely did that didn't go well was the marketing side of it, because you can build a website. I got into a point where I could build a website within 2 or 3 days, you know, the entire business.
Amazing, man.
2 or 3 days. That was the easy side. Having the budget and the manufacturing, not manufacturing, excuse me, marketing side of it, learning Facebook ads and Google ads, that was a whole different story. That was a whole different game plan that I was personally
about that.
Facebook and marketing, first of all, you have to have the budget. Like I was running up credit cards. I was running up credit cards, running Facebook ads. And I think a lot of people started losing interest on different products because they see a product, a cheap product that's from China. People lose interest. So that's where you lose customers, you know, but you don't get more people more engaged. So I think I started learning a little bit more about it, where you actually have to have that wow, that wow factor in a product that catches someone's attention in the first 2 seconds. You know, as soon as you get that, you know, that's what drives, forces people to go from that Facebook advertisement to your website.
For, you know, sure.
So yeah. So I think that's what I didn't do a good job as. I kind of failed at, definitely. And I learned from it. I learned a lot from it.
What type of products were you, yeah, definitely. I was going to say, what type of products were you using? And then also, what did you learn from the whole experience? Because a lot of folks with entrepreneurship, they think just because you don't make money, it wasn't a success. But in reality, just by trying, you can learn so much from just the initial experience alone.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, 1 in 10 drop shipping stores fail, you know, which is completely normal. It's completely normal. I didn't know about that. I was like, okay. I was hyped. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to build this. So I looked into gadgets, electronic products, you know, like smart watches, you know, smart wireless chargers, you know, I focused on that just because I was kind of a little bit passionate about it. You know, technology, it has a little bit to do with the engineering side of it. So I kind of focused on that. So I found a different manufacturer. So I kind of imported those products into my website. It was pretty nice though. Like I gave it to a few people to actually see. They gave me a lot of feedback. So I used that. And I think what I learned from it is just that, first of all, you can't do cheap products. Obviously you have to have something that solves a problem. Yeah. That's the number one thing I've learned, is that you have to have a product that solves a problem within people, you know, so that way that's already a game changer, you know, and solves a problem. You have to have that wow factor. I think that's one of the first few things I learned, where actually like it could help you become successful. And all it takes is one product, to be honest. All it takes is one product. If you have that wow factor that solves the problem, you can even build a store based on one product instead of having a general idea. So most drop shipping stores, they have different items, such like a pencil, stapler, a dog leash, and it's just kind of all over the place. You know, I've learned that the hard way.
Yeah,
I've learned that the hard way, because one of my first sites was that, you know, it was a general store. So I kind of started breaking it down. I found what a niche was, and I started, you know, using one products, or at least products that were actually related, you know. So my first one was called We Wear Smart. So I was focused on smart products and things like that.
Is that something you're still doing nowadays?
I've stopped because I came back to real estate. So I don't remember what got me back into real estate, but something, I think it was something all it took. So that one day I woke up, I took action. I started.
That book alone, of Rich Dad Poor Dad?
I'm sorry?
Was it the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, or just randomly
at first
back into it?
At first, it was definitely Rich Dad Poor Dad. And then second, after that, so I was like, okay, I'm at a point where, you know, like I was about 24 years old, going into 25, you know, I needed to start thinking about my future. So I looked at, so I was doing research. I believe about 90% of wealthy people are involved in real estate. You know, they own some type of real estate. So I was like, okay, so this is my calling. This is my second calling. Maybe I need to actually take it more serious. Now that I have a reliable job that actually, you know, is paying good, you know, it gives me a better chance to actually get a loan. So I started reading books. I was involved in networks. I was going to these real estate investing meetings. I was just reaching out to people. There's a website called biggerpockets.com. It's basically a social media just for real estate. Anything you want to learn, anything you want to know about real estate, it's on there. If you have a question, there's millions and millions of members that can actually answer those questions all with a click of a button, all online. So,
and is that when they, you go close your first deal, like every step of the process you can learn from them?
Basically, yeah. They have free courses where you actually learn the entire process. You know, the definitions are
through the process of you closing that first deal on what that was like.
Okay.
And yes. Also, how it connected with your partner too.
So my partner was my brother. He didn't join until a little bit after. So basically, I think it started started again last October, where I was reading a book. Where's the book? I don't know if I have it here or not, but yeah, it's called House Hacking. So house hacking, basically what house hacking is, being able to live for free while being a real estate investor, perfect way to get started in real estate. So so I started learning about that, sort of reading this book, watching more videos about house hacking. Sort of the idea is that, let's say you get a multifamily unit, which could be, you could do a single family or a duplex. Duplex is basically one house with two different units, kind of like two different apartments. And you can get a loan for that. If you have a good credit and a reliable job, you can get, there's different types of loans. The one I used was FHA, which is first time home buyer. So if you're a first time home buyer, there's benefits. First of all, your credit doesn't have to be that excellent, you know, that perfect. People have the idea of, well, I have to have an 800 credit score to get a house. No. So this FHA is for first time home buyers, and you can only put down 3.5%, you know, so that's on a $100,000 house, you know, you do the math, you know, the down payment is going to be really, I wouldn't say it's cheap, but it's affordable, you know? So I started learning. I was watching videos. I was going to different meetings, getting involved. And I think the one that took work was finding the right deal. So we spent months analyzing different properties. So we would go to Zillow.
Think about when you're analyzing a property, if it's like a good property for you, what do you think about in that sense?
So the first two things I look at is cash flow and what's the return on investment. That's what, to me, that's what determines whether if it's a good deal or not. So what I was looking for, $200 cash flow. And this is what you take home after everything has been taken care of. The mortgage has been taken care of, the repairs. You have to set reserves for repairs. You have to set reserves for vacancies. You have to set reserves for capital and expenditures because of your roof, you know, boiler, water heater.
I put in reserves for those type of unexpected things.
So it depends on the property, the age of the property. So if you have a brand new property, you ain't got to worry about expenses, you know, not expenses, repairs, as much as you have a property that was built in the 1900s. So it kind of depends. But typically what I would do is my vacancy, we set it at 10% of the rent that's coming in. And then your capital expenditure, if it's a new property, you can even go as low as 5%, you know. And then vacancy, yeah, also I've covered vacancy. And then your repair maintenance, you can do 5%. And also you got to figure out whether if you want to manage the property or not, you know. If you want to manage the property, that you know, that brings in more money in your pocket because you're not paying someone else, not paying a property manager to cover those expenses for you. So right now we're managing the property. and it's still a learning experience. But basically, after you set reserves for all of those, we're getting basically about over $200 cash flow every month that's in our pocket. Now you can choose to do whatever you want with the money, but it's right now. I think we're just gonna save that money and then just basically restart. So the beauty of it is you don't have to live in that property forever. You can live in that property for 1 year while the other side is being rented out. So when we got this property, there was already a tenant there. So the property was already cash flowing. Your return on investment is, how much money you put into it, how long does it take you to get that money back? So right now our return on investment was about 19%. So what I was looking for, a return on investment would be about 12% or higher. Typically in the stock market, you see a little bit less. You see some 10%, 8%, 7%, it goes lower. And even leaving your money in a savings account on a bank, most of the time gets you 0.001%. And you kind of get the deal. But basically, that's how it kind of started. So after we found a property, it's like, okay, this is perfect. So we went to visit the property. We got a real estate agent. So we interviewed a couple of agents and we found one that was pretty good. We thought it was pretty good. So she kind of just like walked, and keep in mind, we were learning a lot. So we kind of, at some point, we didn't know everything because there's so much to real estate that you don't know. So it was a learning process.
What were you asking when you interviewed your real estate agent?
So the agent, we asked her, how many deals has she done? How many properties has she closed within the last month? Is she a real estate investor herself? I think that's really important. You want to have an agent that is a real estate investor because they kind of help you understand that process also. If you're an investor, how many deals have you done yourself? Are you doing any other deals in the future? How many different agents people do you work with? Do you work with agents or regular people that buy just homes to live in, So those are the kind of questions that kind of helped us pick the best. And you can see if they're motivated or not, by seeing how long does it take to answer for them to answer an email or a phone call or a text,
Most definitely. Yeah. So now you're currently in this home and you're saying you don't pay any rent as of now. And then the folks next door or like the other side of it, they're the ones that are paying you the rent. And how much are you getting in rent for that? And then once you get that money, what expenses? You said you have your mortgage, you're going to put it down on. Is there a property tax you also pay for?
Yes.
Outside of those things, is there anything else?
So I'm not living in the property. My partner, who's my brother, is going to live in the property. Okay. So the other tenant is going to be paying more than what he would be paying if he were to stay at a normal apartment or normal house, right? Yeah. So the other tenant is covering most of it. And he's going to cover what's left over, right? And he only has to stay there for 1 year. But besides your mortgage, so your mortgage and your interest, you have your property tax, you have your insurance. Those are four things that are called PITI, four things that you always...
Consistent all the time.
All the time. And it depends on the city. Property taxes, of course, it can be high, it could be low. So the property is a little bit closer to Atlanta. So of course, property taxes is going to be expensive. So outside of those, you have basically your operating income, what it takes to operate the property, make sure electricity, everything is flowing, to make sure the property is running smoothly. But basically whenever every month probably the tenant's paying the rent, so when that rent comes in, we pay mortgage as the first thing. The rest of it we kind of spread it out into different bank accounts for your vacancy, your reserves, and then different things like that. Does that kind of help answer the question?
Oh yeah, for sure. I just want to dive into it just because I know there's definitely a good chunk of folks that do listen and mention to me that, hey, I really want you to talk to some folks that do real estate. So that's kind of the reason I go so deep into that.
Oh yeah, those absolutely.
Those folks.
I can sit here and talk about it every day, man.
Most definitely. And then towards the end of this too, we're going to we're gonna definitely, when we post it, we're gonna have like, you know, your LinkedIn in the description, so folks can reach out to kind of
course
more about that. Now, to kind of switch gears, so you're working for the Air Force as an aerospace engineer. What is mm-hmm. that what does that really entail?
Because
this is what we've been talking about, is all like that's been your 5 to 9, but what about your 9 to 5?
So my 9 to 5, it can be busy, very busy and very stressful. So you, for me, some of my job I can actually talk about, and there is a little bit of the other side that I can't actually talk about because of security clearance and things like that. But for the most part, I work on fighter jets, you know, your daily fighter jets. I work on bombers and your cargo jets, you know, the huge cargo jets that go drop off supplies, let's say for like, you know, like a Red Cross relief and things like that. So basically, I work on structural side of it, and I work on ejection seat side of the fighter jets. So basically, my typical day to day, when I'm not going into the office, you know, I would be basically responding to repair instructions, telling technicians how to fix this. You know, it entails of engineering judgment, or we normally go by different books, different manuals that are actually set out on how to repair things like that.
For sure.
And it's nice because the Air Force, they always push you to be on the healthy side of it, you know. So we get time where we can actually go work out. We get paid for it, you know. You don't have to. Yes. So we get 3 hours a week. 3 hours a week, where you can either go work out, or you're doing something active. You know, how you can kind of stay focused, healthy.
That's really cool. Is that, I don't think I've ever heard of any companies doing that. Most companies I've ever heard, like, or not, they're not a company, but I don't know of organizations that do that. Like, I know for most organizations, that's something you do on your break time, but not something that'd be on the clock. But that's really dope that they have that. So what do you typically do with those 3 hours for yourself?
It's awesome. Yeah, if I'm not working out, I'm playing basketball. So I would like right before lunch, get my gym bag, I go work out for an hour, or I go play basketball for an hour, come back, and, you know, do the rest of my work. It really helps. Like, it really, for me, it's been like helpful to take a break in between, go sweat a little bit, you know, be active, come back, you know, with a fresh mind, and to be able to finish out your day. Because we all know about, you know, when that 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock comes, you kind of just, you're washed out, you're tired and things like that. So it kind of helps, you know, it's been a big difference.
No, I feel you. That's what's up. I was going to ask, so, you know, you're doing a lot now. Like, you got you're working full-time as an engineer, you're doing real estate, you're working on your nonprofit. So on the road to success, you know, there's always adversity. And just, I want to ask you, what are some of like the biggest road bumps that you've had in on your path, and how did you kind of work to get over them?
I would say I think your biggest path was just trying to stay healthy and at the same time taking care of family and distraction. I think distraction is kind of something that's always been really, I can easily get distracted. But for the most part, I wouldn't say I didn't have any major roadblocks, you know, that actually kind of just let me down for a while. I've always had the support from family and friends and things like that. So it kind of always helped. But to be honest, I wouldn't say I had a major roadblock where I was like really down. There was some point I was injured, so I couldn't really, you know, do much. Play soccer and then things like that. But I think I've been grateful to not have like something really major. I know some other people, a lot of other people could be dealing with bigger issues that could kind of stop them. But to be honest, I've always had the support of people that just always constantly kept me going every single day. But outside of the distractions and, you know, just kind of just sometimes it's easy. It's too much work that sometimes I just don't want to do anything anymore. I just want to, you know, typically want to sit down and just kind of live a normal life, you know, just work and come back and not do anything. But knowing myself, it doesn't sit right with me when I sit down and not do anything, you know. So I've kind of always, it kind of just like, I always have to feel like I need to be doing something every day to kind of help me be a better person in the future. but yeah.
For sure. And then I know a lot of the questions I've been asking have been really centered around you, but I'm also curious to get your take on, you know, things that have been going outside of just your life, but everyone's life. And just kind of curious to ask you about what your take has been on the recent movement with Black Lives Matter and seeing what everything that's going on. Like today we have protests in all 50 states. We have protests in other countries, whether it's the UK, you know, there have been countries in Africa that have, you know, written statements to pretty much go against the US. The UN's going to be addressing it. You know, there's been things going on in Germany as well as Portugal and like all over the world pretty much. But what's your take on everything that's been going on
and to how be honest, you're
processing it?
I think it took a while to process, but I think it's about time. I think it's about time. It's about time things have changed, because we've been sitting around not doing anything for too long. You know, I think this is our time to take an opportunity of social media, the internet, of, you know, our surroundings to be able to actually make change. You know, as you see the protests and everything that's been happening, you see it live on social media where the news would not cover it as much. So I would say, I agree with everything that's going on right now. I think it's about time where we actually change to make a difference, because this is we're doing this for the future of our kids or other, you know, it's for the future of us, you know, us as a culture, us African Americans, as Africans, you know, as people of color, because it's something that needs to change for the better of this country, for the better of our people. And I think I definitely agree with, at this point, whatever it takes to get people to hear us, to get the country to hear us, to understand what we've been struggling with, we've been dealing with for the past 400, 500 years, I think it's about time. So whatever we've been doing, things I've been doing, people are starting to see some results. You know, things are changing. Their politicians are forming new laws and things like that, but it's not enough yet. I feel like we need to do way more. It's not enough. It's not enough because it's things we've been suffering for 400-500 years. It doesn't take 1 to 2 or 3 months to change. It's going to take constant action, consistency every single day for it to change. But I think I would say I'm proud of us. It's a huge beginning. I'm proud of us. So I hope we keep this going. It's going to change for sure.
Yeah, reform definitely should change sooner. And like you said, that's the crucial part. This is not the finish line, but this is still the beginning stages of it. And that's just the U.S. Like, we look at, you know, Africa, whereas every single country there has been colonized except one, and even that one alone is still dealing with their own issues today. And you start to think, oppression is not something we just see in the U.S., but we see it in all other parts of the world. We see the treatment of, you know, Black folks in China as well, and like other parts of the world. And you start to wonder now, I think the main point is, like, Black Lives Matter is not necessarily something that's just in the U.S., but it's global. And like, I think for the first time ever, it's not just like, oh, we're fighting for change in the U.S. Oh, we're fighting for this change in South Africa. Oh, we're fighting for this change here. But it's become global now for the first time, and that discussion and that narrative of what is a Black life worth now globally is starting to go, and not just in the U.S. But although we're not going to take away that the spark definitely did start here, without a doubt, and that can't be taken away from it. But I think with that narrative being started, I think a big jump is how can we better communicate from, you know, country to country, because we typically, this is something I've just noticed in the past years, not 2020, who knows what's going to happen this year. It's just been, yeah, it's been a lot that's happening, some for the better, some for the worse, you know what I mean? But I've noticed, you know, in past years, it's always, we see the narrative of, oh, hey, I'm Nigerian. Oh, hey, I'm like, you know, Senegalese. Hey, I'm American. And like, we kind of disassociate with ourselves. Mm-hmm. Even though we're all Black and we same oppression, whether and it's in different ways, it's not the same story, right? But in that sense, how can we move towards that narrative of we all do face it in some sense, and it's a global issue.
Absolutely.
What's your take on how we can better drive the narrative and better communicate with each other? Because like a better example maybe is like when you look at Black people in Africa and Black people in the U.S., mm-hmm. who's really teaching Black people in the U.S. about Black people in Africa, and who's teaching Black people in Africa about Black people in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like you look at the media and we might be portraying Africa as just huts in the U.S. and then vice versa. The only thing that's being shown about Black people in the U.S. is rock culture, you know what I mean, hip hop. And yes, hip hop is a part of that culture, but it's not holistically what the culture is, because it just drives the certain narratives and there's certain stereotypes that people come into it with, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I think for the main thing, I think we need to stay united. We need to always stay united. That's what's going to help us stay communicated within each other. We need to put our differences aside. I know there's people think there's differences between Black Americans and Africans, but we need to put those aside and then be united, because this is much bigger, you know, it's much bigger than our differences. So I would say unity is what's going to help us stay communicated to solve this global problem.
Most definitely. How have, so I'm currently in Iowa, there's been protests here in like Des Moines, Iowa City, Ames, you know, Cedar Rapids, like pretty much almost every city here in Iowa, but where have you been? How's it been kind of down there?
I haven't been out and protesting. I've just kind of been like sitting home and just trying to stay healthy, you know, from the COVID and things like that. But I've been heavily involved online, whether if it's not sharing, you know, sharing different links on how people can learn about what's going on right now, or being able to donate to different causes, to the Black Lives Matter movement, things like that. And that's not just one thing. Like if you don't always, it's very important to be out protesting, but you know, protesting is not just one side of it. You know, you can be online learning on. Yes, exactly. You know, learning how to help others understand what's going on, so they can be a part of that movement also, you know, to help make those changes happen, you know, and being able to, I think educating yourself, I think that's also important, helps you understand what's going on right now. And being able to donate to different movements and just helping others, you know, helping others in ways they can't help, you know, in ways that they can't do one thing, but you being able to help them to do another thing. I think that's important.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And then I know you've been talking for me. I just also want to switch gears one more time. And before we wrapped up, also just mm-hmm. curious, because now I want to get back to talking to about you and, you know, your kind of your path. Mm-hmm. With all the work you're doing as of right now, whether it's a nonprofit, you know, your real estate worker, and, you know, your career in engineering, what does kind of success mean to you?
So success means generational wealth for my family and my future kids. I think being able to have something, a structure set up for your family, for yourself, where you can actually get more time, being able to spend more time with them, you know, being able to, you know, go out and travel, learn new things and just experience, and not having to sit behind a desk and then just working constantly until you're actually, you know, you're 60 years old, and then being able to depend on, you know, Social Security and different like that. I think success is happiness, being able to, and happiness happens, you know, when you're spending more time with your family, when you're spending more time learning new things, not having to stress about different things. So to me, everything that I do is to provide my family, to make sure my family is not having to worry about any issues, and, you know, being able to, you know, just being able to help them and make a difference. I want to make a difference in the world. I want to be able to go back. I want to pay back the opportunity that I've been given that a lot of other people were not giving. And I think that would be part of my definition of success, you know, making a difference in, whether it's not just in Africa and Senegal or my close friends and people's lives. I think that's really important to me.
For sure. And knowing what you know now, is there any advice you'd give yourself if you go back in time and talk to yourself when you were younger?
Oh man, I would say be consistent, be persistent, and net. I would say just like network more than I am doing, that I was doing, and just learn new things and just learn new experiences, because there's so many experiences out there. That's what I would tell my younger self.
For
And
sure.
just be outgoing. Be outgoing, man,
For sure. And before we wrap up, I also wanted to give you the chance to answer this question. If you could step into my shoes today, is there any questions you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you today? Is there anything you want to dive into?
Now that I can think of, but one question is, how can I help you? I think that's my question to you. How can I help you doing whatever you're doing, help you move it forward, help you grow it where you can only think of, how can I think that's what my question is before we wrap it up. If you can think of ways I can help, I can step in your way and help, or help others. I think, and this is for Republic also, whoever's listening, how can I help you guys? Reach out to me, let me know what ways we can network and then help you, whether it's working on your goals, whether it's helping me work on my goals, or just like finding a common ground. How can we help each other? I think that's one question that I would ask you.
No, for sure. Thank you for asking that. I really appreciate it. So for me, when I originally like started this, like my yes, it started out with the intention of I want to use this platform to just, show folks that have come from our backgrounds and show them the different avenues you can go down. And I think you're currently doing that as of right now, and just being on this platform virtually means a lot to me. But in addition to that, to go to the next step, my like long-term goal is, it's never, this is something that I'm not just looking to do 100 interviews, but like minimum 1,000 for. And I see a lot of value in content, and especially it being educational, because I'm a true believer in the whole like YouTube university thing. Like there's a lot, like my first start program, that's how I started. But long-term goal is, I want to get to the point of where this can have enough traction to be a voice for, our community, and more importantly, just have more folks like you doing that. But what I want to do is eventually go back to Sudan, and actually, when having a lot of traction with this, I want to just interview diaspora, so people such as yourself, because I know your long-term goal is to make changes in Senegal, and I wanted to use it to connect as many of us as possible. So my thing is, I think you're already doing that. You're on your path in regards to helping me. The only thing I would say is, keep doing what you're doing, and if there's anything you can do in the process to kind of educate people like us and just maybe give them the opportunity to get in touch with you, it's perfect. Because in our communities, is once we become successful, we typically are not in that community anymore. You know what I mean? Like you go to a different part of the neighborhood. So I would just say, throughout your journey, make sure you're just staying in touch with the community, and always looking out for the folks that you've come up with. And I think that's something that's not required by any means, but at the same time, we are all very busy. But I think just taking the time out of your day to kind of like reach out to the younger people that grew up in your neighborhood, just checking on them, like, yo, how are you doing? Those kind of things. But for me, that's how I would say it. So I think you're already doing everything you can, especially the like, what better thing to do than actually have a nonprofit that goes back to Senegal? So I think you're already killing it. And then in regards to the general public, I'm not really sure they can answer that for you, but my only message to the general public is, like, if you're listening to this, every person that has been on this podcast thus far has been someone that like I've actually known, and they're very serious about the things they're doing and the goals they've set. And it's very rare that a lot of them actually have people reach out to them. So my thing is, if you are listening to this and you're actually serious about like maybe going into engineering, it is a thought, or maybe serious about going into real estate, or maybe serious about actually starting a nonprofit, or just maybe going back to Africa to maybe go make change within your own country. Like, it only helps us to better connect with each other as a community. So if you are listening, really do take that seriously. Like, that's something I think not just solely, but everyone else that's been on the show is just like wholeheartedly means that. Like, if you want help, like, or is anything I can do for you, reach out. Like, that's exactly why you asked that question. You know what I mean? So I think you're killing it, and I really appreciate that. But thank you, man.
Man, thank you for having me. I was excited to be on here. I was excited when I read about this. I saw you got this started. This is awesome, and I hope it grows big and it helps actually change people's lives, and yeah, gets the message out.
For sure, man. Thank you so
thank
much.
You. Man, we got to stay in touch, man. We got to keep stay in touch, man. Definitely.
Almost definitely. I'm hoping to actually keep bringing you on every once in a while to just kind of see progress and how things are going.
Absolutely.
Engineering, real estate, or nonprofit, just kind of stay in touch for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate everything you've been doing, man.
Thank you, man. And that'll be all right. For today's episode. Tune in tomorrow for our next interview.
All right. Sounds good.